morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 261, and I'm really excited to have on Brad Vaught, the head women's basketball coach at North Iowa Area Community College. Coach has really built a nice program there in Mason City, and really excited to discuss him and his career and all the things that he's got going on there. Before we get to Coach here, we, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, go out and see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi at 144th and Maple. Check out their practice at CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, iTunes, Spotify, whatever it may be, download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We got a lot of great things going on at A Pen and a Napkin. We got our Varsity Prep Academy coming up this spring. We've got our coaches clinic on April the 12th. Just a lot of really, really good things coming out of A Pen and a Napkin. And the best thing coming out of A Pen and a Napkin as we speak right now is Coach Brad Vaught of North Iowa Area Community College. Coach, how are we doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing great, man. Thanks for the opportunity, Marty. I greatly appreciate it. It'll be fun to talk some hoops with you.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive right into it, Coach. You've built a nice program there. Tell us a little bit about yourself for folks that don't know about you, don't know about your basketball journey. Tell us about you and how you ended up at North Iowa Area.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun story. I was working full time as a assistant pastor, as a youth pastor in a pretty large church, and the church had a school too, a private school affiliated with it, and it was kind of an expectation that that the youth pastor would help out a little bit in the school, but I was always really careful because the church had kids from public school, private school, homeschool, and I wanted you know, be sure that I was in all of their events and supporting all of them. And so I taught one class in the school for like 9 years. And then I just thought, I want to do something different. And the athletic director job was part-time. The school only had 4 sports. I said, let me do that. That'll be something different. Well, there was a coaching change, and they were kind of stuck without a coach. And I thought, you know, I'll do it here, you know? And I loved it. I felt like, It put me in the lives of the students in a little different way, and was their coach kind of instead of, you know, like their pastor. And we won a couple championships. I loved it, and I just decided I want to do that. I want to do that for the rest of my life, however I can. And so I looked around. Who could I learn from? I want to learn some things. I reached out to Brian LaPlante at Rochester Community College, and he's won like over 500 games, and he had just made the national tournament run, and I called him and said, hey, I want to come over, and I just want to watch what you're doing or be a volunteer assistant. And he ended up bringing me on the staff, even paying me some, and I got to just spend a year learning from one of the JUCO greats. And from there, then it just kind of had other doors open, and just have continued to coach you know, wherever I can. And then when the opportunity came to go to North Iowa, I couldn't turn that down. And NIAC is just a really, really fantastic community college. I think there's about 1,500 community colleges in the country, and we were recently ranked one of the top 25 in the whole nation for student success. It's a great place. And so I'm there in my fifth year right now.
Mm-hmm. What drew you to the campus, Coach?
Well, you know, a friend of mine let me know about the opening, and I threw my name in and got the job. And you know, it's a deal where when you go in, the first time I went and visited NIAC, it's a really unique place in that, well, I'll tell you this, there was a kid on campus just recently, who's a starter in the Big Ten. And was just visiting campus, and you know, they were in our housing, and they said, this is nicer than what we have. You know, while you're going through high school, we have a new cafeteria. We have a brand new cafeteria that's amazing. Overlooks a glass wall that overlooks the pond. We got gym renovation. We got it's just this. The academics are really, really great at NIAC, and the campus is beautiful. And it's just not your normal. It's just not your normal community college. And I felt like the school itself had a fantastic culture. The staff members. You know, they cared greatly about the kids. They realized how important the athletics was. The kids were coming in and going on to play at high levels, and that was important. And it's just something I really wanted to be a part of. And now I'm there, and I couldn't see myself ever leaving. It's a really great place. I love it. Yeah. Love it. And I love the Iowa Junior JUCO Conference that I'm in. Mm-hmm. So many great people in that league. Man.
When do you recall, this is our one of our newest categories that we ask every episode, Coach, your Karen self, a pen and a napkin moment. When do you remember your first time starting to write stuff down on paper or on a napkin or whatever it may be, and just, you know, beginning to tap that side of your brain or that part of your brain where you started getting fascinated about X and O's and just the intricacies of the game?
Oh yeah. You know, I was been blessed to meet some just great coaches over the years. And when you just, you know, I've been in a few spots where it's been really fun. I was an assistant coach at Rochester John Marshall when Matthew Hurt was there, you know, and he went on and had a great career at Duke, you know, and he played a little bit last year for the Memphis Grizzlies. And so I got to be a part of, watching just all the craziness involved with that. I remember walking in the locker room one time, and there was Mike Krzyzewski sitting in there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Sitting in that little coach's locker room. And when you just stand and when you just listen to those guys, just listen to them talking hoops and stuff. And but you're constantly hearing things like, you know, I need to write that down. I want to remember that, you know, that was really, really good. It had some cool opportunities like that. And I think, for me, it probably began, you know, one of my biggest mentors is a guy, he's retired now, but he's in the National Christian College Hall of Fame and Athletic Association Hall of Fame. And he was a guy that kind of lived in the area, and it was just beginning as a, you know, when you start off as a coach, you just, everything makes you so nervous because you don't know how am I going to attack this team's press? You know, what am I going to do? How are we going to, you know, what are we going to do here? It's everything. And so it would be, you know, getting together, grabbing lunch, talk to me about this, you know, show me what you run against the odd front defense. Show me what you run against. Show me your press break. How do you do? And it's so funny when you talk, you know, the name of your podcast is perfect because I remember, and even still to this day, like, you know, I'll still want to bring with me when I'm meeting with a great coach. Oh, I'm bringing with me court diagrams and stuff like that. But you're totally right. Early on, it's like, okay, you're grabbing the napkin, right? You're grabbing the little placemat and you're writing on that thing, you know, because you want to remember everything that you hear, you know, and so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. You kind of made the jump here, you know, from assistant coach to head coach, and that's always a huge leap, and you're heading into that at the collegiate level. What were some of the things that you really learned that first year or two as you were stepping into this position, Coach?
Well, I think the big thing for me is I got the job at NIAC when it was the COVID year, and I got hired in like mid to late July. The students moving in August, and there was no team.
Wow.
When I got hired. I mean, the previous coach was real successful, and he had got a job at a higher level. And before I ever got hired, you know, he invited the whole team to go with him, you know, to this other school. So I had two players that wanted to stay, and one player was signed. That's all I had. So there was even talk, like, I guess we won't have basketball. And I thought, man, that would be the worst. I thought it'd be terrible. So I just did everything I could to recruit from anywhere I could. And we made it through that first year we were in. It was a kind of a shortened season with COVID. You know, we were 4-16. We made it through, and I learned a lot that year. Thankfully I had a couple, you know, really great leaders on the team, just fantastic kids. And we made it through, and then I had a year to recruit, And I had a year to get kids on campus and let them see, this is what North Iowa area is about. This is the, check the school out. And we went from 4 wins to 22 wins that second year. But that first year was just, you're right though, Marty. It was a lot of learning and a lot of figuring out, okay, how do we want to do this? Trying to learn and see what's happening in the league. But I just kind of believed all along. I remember telling those kids, just wait. This way, it's not always going to be like that here. Mm-hmm. This is a great place. This is a great school. We're going to win here like crazy. Just wait. There was so much. It was deciding who do I want to recruit? How do I want to handle recruiting? What do I want the culture of the whole program to be? What's really important to me? What's not? Mm-hmm. What battles do I want to fight? What don't I want to? It was a lot of that. Even though it was a rough year, it was a good year of growth for me.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to go through those rough patches to grow, to figure out exactly what you want. A little bit of trial and error, I would imagine.
Yep, absolutely. And what I learned with kids is, the kids I coach is, the best thing you can do is be honest and transparent. I've told them at times, hey, players make mistakes, coaches make mistakes too. I wish I would have done this. And I've said that before in the past to players, we could have maybe that, and most of the time I found that they appreciate when I'm honest you tell them, I've asked you to work on. I've asked you to work on your ball handling. I've asked you to work on your post moves. Okay, these are the things I'm working on. Coaches need to grow too. We need to learn. These are the things I'm trying to learn. And so, yep, mm-hmm. That's totally right.
Yep. Let's talk about some of these influences along your journey, Coach. You got about five or six. You already referenced one. Let's jump back to him here. And I apologize if I mispronounce any names. Brian LaPlante. You said you worked for him for a year. Just what were two or three big takeaways that you had from that year that you worked with Coach?
The biggest thing I still think about, the biggest thing I took from Coach LaPlante was his work ethic. I had never been a college coach. And I got to watch how he did things, and I realized that it wasn't by accident that he would win 20 games every year and be one of the top teams in the nation. He really put in a ton of time. In the evenings he was out at games. He was recruiting. If he wasn't recruiting, he's thinking about what do we need to do in practice here. He's working on that. I think it set the standard kind of for work ethic. And sometimes I can still look at myself and say, Brad, are you working as hard as Brian did over at RCTC? Are you putting in the time that he did? Because that's kind of been the standard that he set for me. So that was a big one right there. And then I think another big thing I learned from him he was such a great defensive coach. I mean, man, he just, he got the players to buy in and really lock down. And it's easy for kids sometimes, especially the JUCO level, they feel like they got to come in and score a ton so they can get that offer to that 4-year school that they want. And with Brian, he really set it out there before the players that, hey, you're going to play great defense or you're just not going to play, you got to play. And I learned a lot from him that way too, I feel like. So.
Mm-hmm. Barclay Radabaugh.
Barclay Radabaugh, and the thing is, I don't know him personally, but he impacted me because a friend of mine was one of his assistant coaches down in Charleston Southern, a small NCAA Division I. And I'll never forget when they came up to play the Iowa Hawkeyes, probably about 15 years ago. And so my friend was an assistant at Charleston Southern. And he got me some tickets we're talking right behind the bench. I mean, I'm sitting on like a folding chair and I could reach my hand forward and pat the players on the shoulder. That's how close I was. I was right behind. So every single timeout, I had a piece of paper and a pen, may have been a napkin, Marty, who knows if I had a hot dog. I had it in my hand, and I was listening to the timeout as if I was right there. I basically was in the timeout. I leaned forward, and my head was near those guys' shoulders, and I was listening to everything he said. And I'll tell you, it was so inspiring to me to hear him. It was so, I think early on as a coach, I felt like, you see great coaches and you feel like you have to be like them, mm-hmm. Well, Barclay Radabaugh, he was this great coach, Division I coach. I was super inspired by the things he said to the players. And yet I never heard him belittle the players or berate the players. I didn't hear him swear. Well, I'm not being negative. I'm not trying to criticize coaches who maybe do that. So I'm just saying I never saw him swear one time. I never saw him, you know, belittle his players. I saw him treat them with respect and yet, you know, got his point across of what they needed to do. And I just remember walking out of Colbert Hawkeye Arena that I remember walking out thinking, I want to coach like that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to coach like Barkley Radebaugh. And he's not coaching anymore, but he had a great career and down there. And so he just kind of, someday I hope I can meet him and kind of tell him that, you know, I mean, he did, when I was sitting, you know, right behind his bench, he did lean forward, shake my hand before the game. And I met him, but so he was real inspiring to me and reminded me that I can be myself. I can be who I am and I don't have to be somebody else. And yep. And it'd still be successful.
Yep. Samba Johnson.
Samba Johnson. Samba is the, he's the associate head coach at Cal Poly. Down there in California on the women's side. Used to be called Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really, yeah, you remember that. Really great, really, really great academic school. And Samba's down there with Chanel Stiers, and they're really turning things around down there at Cal Poly. And I just got to know him. I think he reached out about one of our players at one point, and we kind of got to know each other that way. And then he also, he just texted me, you know, just a few days ago. I think it was on last week, maybe Wednesday. And he just had, with a picture of a player in our league and said, is this player, you know, is this a Division I player? You know, and we just kind of got to know each other that way. And it's just the same thing with him. We have a lot of those same values. He's real positive and a great encourager, really, really good, really, really good recruiter. But he's been somebody I've been able to kind of talk to. And I was just on his podcast a while back. He has a podcast too, and he asked me to be on there. And I just learned a ton from him, and a fantastic guy. And he was named one of the top, like, 30 coaches, assistant coaches in the country or something like that. So I just another guy that I've talked to, learned from about the game, and that's helped make me better.
Mm-hmm. Justin Moss.
Justin is not too far from me. He's over at Upper Iowa. He's the head women's coach at Upper Iowa.
Okay. And
he was at Morehead State in Kentucky as a Division I assistant for, I think, maybe like, maybe 5-6 years, I think. I'm not sure. But he's just a guy that, same thing, you know, he kind of has had some interest in our players at NIAC. But then I've seen, you know, there's times where I'll just call him up for advice, and he's always there. You know, like, hey, I'm thinking about this, Justin. What do you think? Or what would you do in this situation? And there's a couple times I've just drove over, I think probably 3 times now, I've just drove over to Upper Iowa. He said, come on over, and we talk basketball. He shows me some of the things they're doing over there. And he's doing a really good job there at Upper Iowa. I mean, he's kind of really turning things around in that women's program. I mean, good things are happening. And he's just been somebody that's always just been a phone call away to get advice from. He's doing a good job, so I appreciate him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Keith Champion
is probably he was probably my first mentor when I became a coach. He coached a lot of different colleges, a lot of small colleges, and he's now retired. He's in the Hall of Fame for the NCCAA, National Christian College, and just a real good guy that every now and then. I've done a few, just even since I've been at NIAC, done a few calls with him, or Zoom calls with him, just talking basketball. And he used to have like a column in a local a newspaper kind of about sports. And it was always real positive, what we can learn from it and the good things that we're seeing in athletics. I feel like when I talk to him, he always keeps me grounded on what matters the most. Like, you know, it's so black and white whether we're successful or not. The scoreboard tells us, you know, they had this many points, you had this many points, well, you failed in this game, Brad. And he's always been really good about reminding me about what matters the very most in coaching, and that's the people. And are you impacting these players that you're blessed to coach in a positive way? And that's the big picture. So he's just always been just a real, always helped speak positivity into me as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Last one here, Sean Long.
Yeah, Sean, Coach Lang, Sean Lang. He was at Rochester Male High School for a long time, and I was still a really young coach when he gave me a shot to be an assistant. And I remember walking to his classroom. I didn't even know him really, and sitting down and talking to, what's it like to coach in the state tournament? I remember asking him and getting to know him. And Coach just came and spoke to our team this past Saturday. It's just been really neat to see the way he lives his life. You know, the big thing I learned, that just shocked me right away when I became an assistant at Rochester Mayo with him. I'd never seen this at any other school I've been at. All of a sudden, like after a game, there'd be alumni players. And I remember even a former coach that would all hang out outside the locker room so they could see him and they could talk to him. He had built that strong of relationships that everybody still wanted to be a part of what he had done and what he was doing. And it was just like, man, I remember thinking that's what you want it to be. I mean, you want people to feel like that, you know, that they still want to be there and be around you. And he coached a couple of great players. One played at Loyola in Chicago, and Jordan Hicks is still playing pro basketball overseas. And then one played down at Rice, and Jordan's mom had passed away, and they kind of took him in as a member of their own family. And he's just been a good, grown to be a really good friend that I've learned a lot from too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also, Raz is very involved with USA basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have 2 smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have 2 designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. 3 coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring 4 or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Coach, you know, things have changed here in the landscape of things. Let's talk about the junior college game, just overall. I mean, we had the ruling coming out here maybe less than a month ago about eligibility and different things like that. But let's start with just the benefits. If you're a player and you might be on the fence about junior college, and there's certain stigmas with every single level of basketball. I mean, you know, Division I is supposed to be this, but also it could turn into this. You know, the story broke here in the last couple of days about the gal that was at Wisconsin, and she alleged a bunch of different abuse against the coaching staff there at Madison and different things like that. So every level has its pluses and its minuses. What have you really enjoyed about the junior college level? What has been kind of some of the big benefits for the players that have gone through it at your program at your level?
Well, I think there's some, man, Marty, there's some really great benefits that I've seen. The first one is you're coming in, and what I've seen is that just being freshmen and sophomores, kids get on the floor right away in big moments and big games. And I just think the chance to grow and improve and develop as a player is huge because you're not getting in there waiting behind juniors and seniors.
Yeah,
you know, you're in there and you're playing right away. And I remember we got a kid that one of our kids that went on to play in a 4-year, and she got a full ride at an NCAA Division II, and she's playing right now. And my daughter and I just went down to watch her, took a trip down to watch her play down south here a while back, and her mom says she improved so much at NIAC. And you know what, I don't think it was a great skill building program, but I really think it was that she was out there from the start, and she was out there playing big games, meaningful games, yeah, right away in her college career. And granted, you know, we put them on a great weight. We have a great strength and conditioning coach with Mark Verb at our school. We put the kids on a good strength and conditioning program, and we try and, you know, make sure that they're taking care of themselves and eating healthy, and we're doing, you know, and all those things. And strength and skills is so important to what we want to do. But I think that helps a lot, the fact that you're playing in big games right away, your first 2 years of college. And then another big advantage is we've seen a ton of kids, Marty. I see tons of kids come into NIAC and they say, I just feel like I could have been recruited higher out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like I could have gone higher to a higher level. So they kind of are believing in themselves and coming down to NIAC, hoping that maybe a year playing in our league, you know, maybe that might help. And that's worked for, we've had a lot of kids that's worked for. Kids that didn't have, you know, Division II or Division I offers, and then or offers they really liked, and then after a year or two of improving and playing, and they were able to get an offer like that. And so that's another thing, I think. We don't, you know, a lot of kids, the JUCO level is a great way to go if you have academic struggles. You know, some kids come out of high schools, are qualifiers, some are non-qualifiers, you know, and if they go to JUCO for 2 years, they become a qualifier. I kind of do our program different than some programs, and I'm not judging anyone else, but I go after really, really great kids who are great players. That's what I try to do. Like, I'll give you an example. Like this year, we sent our sophomore day. Every one of the sophomores, all six of them, were honor students first semester.
Mm-hmm.
All of them were academic all-region. On my team, 12 of the 13 players got academic all-region. So I don't really recruit many non-qualifiers. You know, I just feel like if you work hard enough, you can find kids that want to get it, really, really want to get a degree, and they really want to, you know, they realize the importance of academics, and yet they're still good players too. And so, but for some kids, I'll tell you though, they've come to a JUCO because they know that it'll help them to get their eligibility to go on to a 4-year. So that's a great thing too. But now we're talking, if the NCAA, you know, after the Vanderbilt quarterback sued and got his year back, and they already gave a number of athletes a year back. If things were to continue to trend in that direction, Man, can you imagine, Marty? What if you could go to a JUCO for 2 years, play 2 years, get stronger, get better, get your associate's degree, and then after that, go on and play 4 years at a 4-year. Then you're talking about you're going to be better when you get there, and on top of it, you'll be getting your master's degree, not just your bachelor's degree. Why wouldn't kids do that? You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of did the 6-year route, but it was only for one degree. So, you know, I'm not going to get into too many. I'm just kidding. No, I didn't get a real job until 6 years out of high school, but I did have 2 degrees by that point. So I do have that going for me. But yeah, you know, it is changing that ruling is changing the landscape. How have your conversations changed? When it comes to recruiting and talking to kids over the last few weeks, now that this, we'll just call it the Vanderbilt ruling is in place.
You know, I try and, you know, when I recruit kids, I just always try and be 100% honest. And I don't have to look over my shoulder and wonder what I said. And I tell them, now, you heard about this. And I said, you've seen what's happened. Now, I said, nothing is for sure yet. You know, we're still waiting to see how everything is going to for sure shake out,
Yep.
And how it will 100% affect you. But I make them aware of the fact that, you know, JUCO's never been more popular, I feel like, than it is right now. Mm-hmm. You know, the JUCO coaches were always the cool coaches. People just didn't always realize it. The JUCO coaches are the cool coaches.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people that are watching that to see what's going to happen and what levels that will affect, you know. And I did hear from a parent of one of my players that's playing Division I right now. And she's doing really well. She's a leading scorer and rebounder at her school. And her mom just said she's really, really excited about that opportunity to be able to play for another year, you mm-hmm. know. And hopefully everything, you know, I want to see that. You know, I would like to see the JUCO level become kind of like junior hockey, right? Junior A's. I'd like to see kids be able to come to us, play for 2 years, and then I would like to be able to tell 4-year universities, you know, yeah, they got 4 years now, right? When they come to you, they've taken great strides. They're a better player than when they got out of high school, and I think that would be really fun. So that's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping happens.
Well, I was having a conversation with somebody, and I can't remember who it was, and I probably had this conversation with more than one person. But you know, you kind of take a look at the landscape here, and what we're in my opinion, what we're starting to see develop, but for better or worse, is in a lot of ways. Your junior colleges have always fed into your 4 years, but it's going to be a different type of relationship. But now you have your low majors and a lot of your mid majors that are feeding into your upper mid majors and high majors, you know, because of the NIL opportunity. So you're talking about not only 6 years of eligibility potentially if this all plays out, but you know, you're going to be making, you know, if you are good enough, you are going to be making a lot more than a history teacher and very average podcaster just in Omaha, Nebraska is making by that point as well. You know, so there's so many things that we have yet to fill out to figure out, don't you think?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that when you say that, my thought, right, I went to last summer. I was at an AAU event. You know, they had the coaches seating down at the end of the court. And I'm sitting there and there was a Division I coach sitting next to me, and we were visiting a little bit, and she's at exactly what she said. She's at mid major, low major, maybe, and she said to me, it was interesting, Marty. She said, "We are the new JUCO." Mm-hmm. That's what she said about her school. We are the new JUCO. You know, saying that if they have a kid that does really well, well, they can't keep them because, you know, a high major will come in and just swoop in and take them away with money they can't give. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's totally becoming, but you know, what's really something, but we're seeing a lot of where I'm at in NIAC, we're seeing a ton of kids coming in just on transfer pathways, whether they are athletes or not. Like, you know, my daughter graduated from NIAC a couple of years ago and she got accepted to every 4-year school she applied to. And so a lot of kids are thinking this, they're saying, I'm going to come in, I'm going to go to a community college, I'm going to save tons of money Yeah. And after I get my 2-year degree, I'll just transfer around to a four-year school. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, the number of kids, a few years ago, 3 or 4 of the girls on my team were the valedictorian of their high school.
Wow.
And we're seeing those kids all around campus. I was in an academic advisement meeting, Marty, with a kid, and he brilliant kid. He had, I don't know, like a 32 or 33 or something like that on his ACT in math. And he wants to be an engineer. And there was a really, really great engineering program at this 4-year university he was going to go to, but it was considerably more expensive than what NIAC would be as a community college. And he just said, I'm going to start at NIAC, and then I'm going to transfer my credits. So many kids are doing that to save some money.
Yep.
And it's, but I love it. I love JUCO. I love the direction of our school. Our enrollment is the highest it's been in like a really long time. We had a big increase, and there's really good things that are happening. And so I love right where we're at, and I'm excited to see what's on the horizon in with the NJCA. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm a JUCO guy. Originally, I went to junior college for a year. My dad taught at a junior college in Iowa, in Sheldon, Northwest Iowa Community College for 30 years, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's near and dear to our family's heart as well. So I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to all that. So, let's talk about your team a little bit here, Coach. You're off to a great start, 17-4. You're playing in a highly competitive conference. You got a lot of really, really good teams. You've had some nights where you've put the ball in the basket here. You're 128, 120, 118. I mean, you know, Paul Westhead is going to start getting film of your games here, Coach, and start checking this out. But you know, obviously you got to be feeling good about your team, but it's also, you know, that next step, busting through, trying to make that really big run. You know, where are you at with your team right now, and how are you looking at it in that regard?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is, so my first 4 years at NIAC, I didn't have one significant injury, not one. Mm-hmm. I mean, to see another team and a kid on crutches, but, you know, my thought would be, wow, that looks like a bummer. Oh, man, I'm glad I'm not going through that right away. But then in this year, two of our top players have suffered season-ending injuries. Uh-huh. and great players. One had just had a 41-point night where she was 10 of 12 from three and playing great. And the Division I talked about flying in to watch her. And then it was just like a non-contact type of injury. And another one hurt her. So that's been really tough. But it's really been, you know, so from the team perspective, but we've had other players that we got a lot of depth. We have a lot of good players. So we've got other players that have kind of picked up the slack a little bit, and it's harder when you lose two top players. It's tougher, but we've been able to keep going. And our goal, you know, we want to, beginning of the year, we talked about, we wanted to get to the national tournament. You know, that was our goal, and still is. I still think we got a great, great shot. Two teams from our region can win their way there. And, you know, Kirkwood is the number one team in the country. And we had them at our place. We had a 13-point lead in the third quarter. We just let it get away. We had a one possession game, and it was a one possession game in the fourth quarter. We just couldn't close it out, and we were without one of those top players. We were without our top player and one of our top players. And so it's I feel like we can still maybe get there, but that's our goal. We want to get to the national tournament and want to bring a national championship to North Iowa, to Mason City. So many unbelievable people and great people that support us, and that's what we want to do. So we're just working hard. Everybody keeping our eyes on the prize. We got a big game tomorrow night, and we're just that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, trying to get kids to good places at the same time. Yep. So,
coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Yeah. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden here. The John Wooden quote of the day. It is time for that, sir. From Wooden, a lifetime of observations. Coach Vaught, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day?
Oh, I love it. Let's hear it.
All right. From page 86 of Wooden, a lifetime of observations, the John Wooden quote of the day is, "To worry about whether I'm building is going to be better than what someone else is building elsewhere is to worry needlessly." That was terrible phonics there. Let me try that again. "To worry about whether what I'm building is going to be better than what someone else is building elsewhere is to worry needlessly. I believe that if I'm worried about what's going on outside, it will detract from my preparation inside." Sorry about my ain't got no good English there, but we got it figured out there. Coach, what do you think of that one?
That is awesome. You know, the first thing that came to my mind when you read that, I thought of Don Meyer over at Northern State. We've been at Lipscomb all them years and over at Northern State.
For the first 100 episodes, it was the Don Meyer quote of the day.
I thought about that because he always used to say, "Give your gift away," right? You remember him saying that all the time?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Give your gift away. And, you know, it reminds me of, so in our league, there are so many great coaches in our league, like coaches that I become friends with, you know, and when I got in the league, the first coach that called me and welcomed me to the ICCAC and visited with me was Steve Krasison.
Former Iowa Hawkeye. You know, yep.
Former Iowa Hawkeye. He's one of the, I think I read he's one of only two players in history to score in a Final Four for two different teams. He played for North Carolina and scored in the Final Four there. Then he came over here to the Hawkeyes.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, he's the best. Let me tell you, Marty, when we go to play at Des Moines, he was at DMAC for a long time, at Des Moines Area Community College in our league. I would love going over there because before the games, he'd say, "Hey, Brad, come here." And we'd go in his office and he'd show me some great stuff that he has. I mean, he was a music guy. He loved music. But I remember the last thing he showed me was, you know, when Dean Smith passed away, do you remember he sent a letter out to all his former players with a check in there?
For $200. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So I'm holding that letter. I'm holding that check. You know, it's pretty cool. But he just, and so when we went back there and played this year again, it was cool to, it was great to see him and be able to visit with him. And then, you know, the coach at Northeast Nebraska there in Norfolk, he and I have gotten to be friends.
Oh, Matt Savala.
Really good guy. Matt Savala is just, he just won his 700th game. The guy's an absolute legend. You can't find a nicer guy. And, you know, I have a son who's handicapped, who's special needs, there's a scholarship at our college in my son's name. And so we got some T-shirts made one time that said Brody's Buddy, and the money would go towards the scholarship and that would go to a NIAC student. And I gave him one of those shirts at one point. Well, then the other day we played him, and after the game he comes walking around to our locker room around the corner. He's got his Brody's Buddy T-shirt on.
Awesome. You know,
just just the best guy ever. But there's, but I could go on and on. The coach at DMAC now, Jocelyn Kavorek, the coach down at Iowa Lakes, Ashley Martin. There's just so many really good people in our league. And I think it was what you shared just reminds me that we're kind of, even though we're competing on the court, we're all in this together to try and help young people, right? Yeah. Try and help them become better people, help them have better lives. And so that's an awesome quote.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into some of your stuff here, Brad. Let's take a look at what you do and what you're doing to try and build your program up there. Again, from 4 years ago, you're at four wins, and now you're hopefully knocking on the door of a possible national tournament appearance and that type of thing. And a lot of coaches talk about culture and building culture, but you've done that, and it's hard to do that in a rebuilding. I mean, it's hard to do everywhere. Don't get me wrong. It's hard. Human beings are complicated entities without a doubt. And it's hard to get everybody on the same page. And, so what do you feel like you guys have done well within your program, to create such a strong culture, a program of really academic excellence, like you're saying, 12 of your 13 kids were on the honor roll and the academic recognition list, all of those different things, what are you doing there, man?
Well, I think for us, a big thing is, we try and play a lot of players and use our depth as an advantage. So, I think last year, if you looked at like the five scholarship levels of college basketball, right? NCAA Division I, Division II, NJCAA I and II, and NAI. If you look at those, I'm not saying there's not other good levels. I mean, Division III is great and all these, but yeah. If you look at those five levels, I don't think anybody played more players than we did. I felt like our depth could be a real advantage to us. And so I think when you play a lot of players like that and you have that kind of a philosophy and you build that culture, the kids, everybody's excited. Everybody's into the game. Everybody's focused because, I might go in, right? I might be put into the game. I don't sit here on the bench all the time. I might go in. So I think that's one thing right away. We try and play up tempo on made baskets. We jump into a full court pressure right away, and we run and jump, and we try and get the game up tempo and try and use a lot of players to our advantage that way. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, we just always, the big thing that I emphasize to the players is that what's best for the team is best for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
The best I tell them is that the coaches that call me, the great coaches that call, a lot of times they call because we're winning games like crazy.
Yeah.
And I told them, it's not always true, but I told them yesterday, even yesterday in practice, I said, nobody cares about the leading scorer on a team that never wins.
Yes.
I know it's not always true, but I said, if we stick together and we put the team first and we win, that's going to be good for each one of you. And I had a coach last year, a Division I coach's team made the NCAA tournament, and he had just said that, he wasn't discouraged at all about a player of ours he was looking at, because her scoring average wasn't real high, because he even mentioned it on the call that we play a lot of players and the stats are going to be spread out among a number of different players. So I think if everybody has a role, that really helps with your culture. If everybody feels important, and that they're valuable, that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done that. And then we put a high price tag on relationships. We try and let them know that another one of my favorite John Wooden quotes was, your players are people, not pawns in a game.
Yep.
Right. So I try and let them know each one of you, you really matter to my wife and I. My wife's around the program a lot. I want them to see that my family's really, really important. And so I'll tell them, you guys really, you matter a lot to Brenda and I. We want you not just to win games. We want to see you win at life. Mm-hmm. When you're going out and you're reaching the dreams you have. So I think it's got to be a heavy emphasis on relationships and letting kids know that when they come to NIAC, they really matter. They matter to us.
Yeah. Well, and I love what you said about playing a lot of players and getting up, I've always believed that, you know, sometimes I would play an extra kid or two, if at all possible, just because, boy, it's hard to continue to, it's just human nature. It's hard to continue to practice hard if you're not getting a few minutes here and there in the ball game. And you can talk about relationships, or you can talk about this, but it's difficult to find that rare kid. It's like, hey, I'm okay with just, you know, putting my everything I got on the line and not getting any, you know, reward at the end, so to speak. And the reward in the game for the player's point of view is those game minutes and getting the opportunity to play, you know. So I've always believed playing a lot of players, it helps with a couple of the things that you've talked about. When you inevitably have an injury or perhaps an academic issue or whatever, you've got players that aren't just coming in cold. But I also think it helps your practices, because if you practice well enough, you coach is showing, hey, he's going to play 9, 10, 11 players in a game. If I do that, I've got a chance, instead of here's his 6 or 7, and I'm just kind of stuck. I mean, that's something I've always believed. It sounds like we're kind of on the same wavelength there, Coach.
Well, you know, it's exactly right. Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. You know, when we played Northeastern this past Saturday, that was a really big game, and the score was still really, really close. And I put a kid in. I just thought, I told my assistant, I think she can help us right here. And I put a kid in who doesn't play a whole lot, and right away she got a steal and she got a bucket. You know, and mm-hmm. then in probably the 5 minutes she was out there, I think she got 3 fouls, but you know,
she's going to get her money's worth.
She got her money's worth, you know, but you know what? She came in and she contributed to the team and to the success of the team. And somebody even said afterwards, I was surprised you put her in. But she came in and she did a good job. And then the best thing ever is when you can go to that player afterwards and say, look what you did. You went in there and you lifted us up.
Yeah.
You helped us. What you did was, I mean, man, that was great. You were ready to go when I put you in. And then that just, you know, that means everything to, you know, and they're a part of it. And so that's what we tried to do. And then I try and use that in recruiting. I say, hey, take a look at our team. If you're planning on coming and sitting and learning for a year, we're not the place to come, because you're going to be out there. You know, we're going to try and use you. And so we try and play as many as players as we can. Well, obviously it's college basketball. We're still trying to win, you know, mm-hmm. but
yep.
I think that's been a positive thing for our culture. And then we also, you know, we, like I said, we make it about people. I have a son who's special needs, and we bring him around the team as much as we can. He's you know, nonverbal and got a lot of challenges. He's a great kid. He loves people, and it's been a little bit of a reason why my wife and I do this. You know, we figure that there's a chance that we might one or two of these girls could have a child with special needs, and you know what, I want them to be able to think, well, you know, Coach Vaught, you know, he and Brenda, they had Brody, and it's still great to be a parent, you know. And one of my players that played on the team last year just reached out, and they said that they took a job at a school working with special needs kids, you know. And so that kind of stuff means a lot to us. So trying to invest in their lives and have them become better people because they came to NIAC for 2 years, that's what we want to do.
Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America: Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season, in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through: COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court. Coach, let's talk a little bit about your offensive philosophy. What are you doing there? What do you like to run? You know, what systems do you, are you a set play guy? Are you a motion guy? Are you a pattern offense type of guy? How do you implement it? All those, I threw like 9 questions at you in about 4 seconds. So, you know, let's talk a little offensive basketball here.
Well, my wife is, she coaches a coach, and she told me, don't give away everything that you do. She just told me.
It's all on film at this point. So
a big dean tomorrow night against Eldridge. No, but you know what? Here's what I do. And this is my, just starting off with the philosophy from the very beginning. And so I go after, I don't recruit into a specific system. I go after the best players that I can get. I go after the most talented players that I can get. And then I look at what we brought in, and I find a system I feel like it's going to be great for them. So let's say I bring in two All-State 6'2" kids. Mm-hmm. I would never pass on one of those kids because, well, I run a 5-out, so I'm not going to hire, or that kid. So if I can get, if I happen to be able to, if I feel like, hey, I can land that kid right there, I think that kid would come to NIAC and she's going to be great. Well, then one year we might run a 3-out, 2-in and run high low, right? Yep. Or, another year I may say we landed a lot of really, really good guards and man, we're fast as lightning. And then, so then we may be, it may be different, we may be a 4-out or a 5-out. And so I kind of fit the system we run based on the talent that we bring in. But like, for example, so this year, we're up near the top of the nation in 3-pointers, mm-hmm. 3-point shooting. We have some great, really great guards. And then we have a forward who's she's one of the greatest players in the history of our school. She's the first player in school history to have it's a 2-year school now, over 700 points, mm-hmm. over 300 rebounds, over 200 assists. And she's a 5'10 forward. And she's just unbelievably athletic. I mean, can beat everybody's guards down the floor. She's strong.
Yep.
And she's the slasher type. So what we did this year is we're running an offense where we start with her down the short corner and we bring her up to the elbow. And when we get her the ball at the elbow at the high post, then we have lots of different actions off of that, but we do different things from there, dribble handoffs, stagger screens, all the cuts, different things. But we want to get her the ball there to kind of start everything out. And if people deny her the ball there, then we have other things that we do off of that. So this year we're kind of a 4-out, with one at the elbow. But then there's also an offense though that, like you're talking about, that I just put in every year just because I love it. And it's a 1-4 high that I learned from the guy you mentioned earlier, Keith Champion. Mm-hmm. I learned that from him when I began coaching, and I just love that offense. It's got everything in it. It's got UCLA in it right away, and then it's got it's got looks for everything. It's got post up looks there. So I do run it. I do have a continuity that we run with lots of different options off of it, and then I have a motion that's kind of centered around our best player, and then I always have probably 15 to 20 different sets and things like that, or quick hitters and stuff. And so, but a lot of it can change from year to year based on the players that we bring in. So I don't know if that makes sense to you,
Yeah, no, it does. It does. I mean, you gotta, you have to be able to adapt to your players, and their strengths. Later in my career, I went much more motion based, but we tweaked our motion from year to year to fit, the players that we had and put them in the positions that they were going to be successful. And I think that's what you have to do. I think is just, it does no good to run something because you feel comfortable with it, but your players don't. You've got to put them in a situations of strength.
And one thing we really emphasize, and we work on it, I would say pretty much every day in practice, is we are getting the ball down the court 100 miles an hour. And the mm-hmm. ball is, if they score, we better have the ball inbounded before it hits the ground. Mm-hmm. If it bounces once, maybe that's, we're okay with it. But if the ball bounces twice, then somebody's coming out of the game. But we have to get the ball and get it down the floor quick. And we tell a lot of our players, if you get a rebound, I don't want you to outlet the ball. I want you to turn and head straight down the floor, straight down the middle of the floor. And mm-hmm. we want to always get the ball down the court as quick as we can. Doesn't mean we're going to shoot it right away, but we want to get the ball down the floor quick in transition and put the pressure on that team to get back. And we want to just get after him. And that goes back to, I feel like because we use a lot of players, I just feel like we're always going to be the freshest team. We're going to have the most energy late in the game. And that we can play that way. And so we really push the ball. We really try and push the ball too. But then I always tell the players, but you know, you want to play fast. It's hard to play fast if you're always inbounding the ball.
Yeah.
Right. You got to get defensive stops. We have to play great defense. And then it becomes easier to be a great transition team. And so.
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about that tempo. You know, that gives you another excuse to play more players and push that tempo. Hey, Mary, go out there. I expect you to play as hard as you literally can play for 3.5 minutes. And if you do that, you're going to need a break and I'm going to take you out. But then when you're ready, I'm going to put you right back in because you're going to be rewarded for playing that hard and running the floor that hard. And an expression we used to use a lot when we would run like the Loyola, you know, secondary break and that type of thing was, you know, run for a teammate. Yeah. You may not be getting the layup, but the person that comes in after you, they get the layup because you just ran the snot out of that person for the 3 minutes that you were in. And that person finally broke minute four, minute five. And yes, you don't get credit for that layup, but in a way you do, you know, so those are things we would talk about as well.
That is great. And, you know, what's so funny that you said that, Marty, because for the first time at NIAC, I did this. So one of our best players, I mean, she's had a great NCAA Division II program from Texas just reached out to her recently. She's just a great player. And I hadn't done this for any player, but she was playing last game, even though she was sick. She wasn't going to miss a game. She wanted to play. And so I told her this. I said, listen, when you feel like you got to come out of the game, you let me know. And if you bring yourself out of the game, you can pick when you go back in. And I never told any player that. But I gave her that. You play, you know, I feel like, you know, my thought was then she'll be able to play as hard as she can, you know, as tough as she can, knowing that she can get a breather and she'll be able to go back in. But that's what I, and you know, it worked at least, I guess, you know, we won.
You know,
and she had a. And she played a good game. So anyway, but
yeah. Well, hey, it's stuff that you learn along the way, and you got to be able to build that. You got to be able to build that trust with players that they're not going to abuse that as well. So you know,
right?
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
Coach. Let's talk about, you know, it is funny. It's the end of January. This is the time of the year, regardless of level. Where these are when the real issues usually start cropping up. Players are tired, coaches are tired. If you're a coach and you feel like your team's underachieving or you're frustrated with your team, this is when coaches start picking up technical fouls. Referees are more apt to give technical fouls because they're tired of people chirping at them for 2 or 3 months. You know, all of those different things. And you know, this is, you know, also the point of year where coaches start to hear stuff from parents. It's just the nature of the beast. You can set your clock to it. You know, so what are some things that you do? And granted, it's a different, and a lot of people that listen to this are high school coaches, but we've got parent issues, or I don't want to say parent issues. The way I try to phrase it is, how can we work with parents in a positive manner and make that relationship stronger and have them understand where we're coming from? We all have the same goal in mind. We want our kids to have the best experience possible. At the same time, their definition of a great experience might be a little bit different than what's ours is because their playing time, their shots, their this, their that might not match what equals a great experience for the team. You know, so what are some things that you've done to try and enhance your parent experience and work with your parents in a positive manner?
Well, I try, you know, I include the parents in that. And you know, most coaches do, but in that whole recruiting process, I include the parents in that. And, you know, I want to get to know them. I want them to get to know me. And I want them to have a trust that we care about their child. And, you know, it was one of the players that got hurt this year. Her dad is a great coach at a really well-known school. And the athletic director told me that he sent a letter out to some of the staff members just talking about how much he appreciated our program and how much we cared about his daughter and how we helped her through that time. And so I think it's easy to shy away from parents and act like, hey, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. This is about your kid. But I think they, you have to try and have a good, relationship with them. But my big thing is this, is always tell the players, you know, you gotta come and talk to me. Mm-hmm. You're an adult now.
Yeah.
You know, you're in college here. I don't, you know, your dad, mom reaching out to me. I mean, I don't know how does that help you at all? You need to come to me, sit down with me. And I have a great assistant coach, Taylor Mooney. Sit down with me and Taylor, and we got to talk about why you're not playing more. Or in our players, I mean, I think one thing I really appreciated, I've got to know Eric Peterson, the men's coach over in South Dakota. And he said to me one time, you know, every player on our team, every player knows why they're playing the amount of time they are and why they're not. Mm-hmm. He told me that one time I was watching one of their practices, and he just said, we communicate with them that this is what we need you to do, you know, and this is what you need to get better at, you know, and I think you got to be really, really honest with each player. And then they have to always, the big thing I say multiple times is we're always going to do what's best for the team. You may not think it's what's best for you.
Yeah.
We're going to do what we feel is best for the team. And I had a talk recently with a player who wanted to play more, and I had to say, hey, let's take a look here specifically at these numbers. Okay. This is what you're shooting. This is what you're doing here. You know, this is what these players here are doing. And I think you have to be honest, you know, and so that way they know where they stand and they know what you want them to improve in. And I've had talked with players, Marty, sometimes where I say, hey, listen, take the pressure off yourself offensively. You know, if you go out there and you play great defense and rebound and offensively, if you move the ball and there's no pressure on you to score, then we can put you out there. You know, we can get you out there on the floor. But I think you have to have those talks, and they have to feel like they can approach you to talk about those things too. You know, if every time a player comes to you and you snap at them, well, because I'm the coach or whatever, well, then they're not going to be comfortable to talk to you. They're not going to know what they could do to improve or to become a better player, to earn more minutes. And so I don't know if that totally answers, but I tell them always at the beginning of the year, I always tell them, you guys need to reach out to me. You need to come and talk to me. You know where my office is. We'll sit down and talk before I, you know, hear from your dad or your mom. You know?
No, I don't disagree with you there, coach. You know, I think that's one of the things that you, even at the high school level, you have to try and emphasize. You know, you have, like I have said before to parents, you know, how does you talking to me about your daughter's playing time benefit them? You're not in practice, you don't see it, but it, you know, the bigger picture is, you know, when your daughter has an issue with her boss at Enterprise Rent-A-Car 10 years from now, are you going to call them up or at the accounting office that they're working at or wherever it may be that they're, you know, no, that's not going to happen, you know? And, you know, so you have to, you know, and, you know, you have to, I'm trying to decide how far I want to go with this. You have to put that pretty bluntly at times where you're just like, no, we are not going to run anonymous Google forms to talk about these things. If I approach your daughter or your daughter approaches me, that's the way we're going to handle things. And if I say, hey, is everything good? Do you have any questions? Do you need anything from me? And they say no, then I don't know what else I can do, nor do I really feel the need to do anything else because, you know, I have done my response. We are going to have adult face-to-face conversations. We're not going to text back and forth. We're not going to do this type of stuff. This is, you know, athletics is much more than putting a ball in a basket. It's life lessons. And that's where a lot of those things start at. And you try to have those conversations calmly, patiently. You try to have parents see your point of view. And you know, my dad, you know, very wise guy, he said, you know, just sometimes it doesn't matter what you say. You're never, they're never going to see your point of view as a coach, because that's their child and they love that child more than anything else. And that's just the way you got to roll with it. So, sorry, I kind of went on a tangent there, but you know,
well, you're totally right. Like, it's interesting that you say that. So just this week, I had a talk with the players about, it was before we had a film session, and I talked to them about the difference between a text message or an email or written communication and the difference between talking to somebody in person. I said, you know, when you talk to somebody in person, they can catch your tone of voice. They can text, they can get the sincerity of what you've said. They can see, you know, whether you're joking or not, or whether you're angry. I said, all that can be lost in a text message. I said, you know, when you have really important things to communicate, you need to go talk to somebody face to face. You know, and I was just kind of, and I even gave an example. I one of the players, I said something to him one time. I said it really nice. And then the next time I said it kind of jokingly. And then the other time I said it really angry. And I said, same words, right? The exact same words. And so I think kids, you know, because that's the default thing, to send out a text message. And so I've told my players, if you're upset about something, about your playing time, or you don't understand something, come and see me, and let's all talk about it. You know, we can visit about that and give you an understanding of why we decided to do what we did. You know, and it doesn't mean that anything will necessarily change, but you'll know where you stand, and you'll know what you need to work on, what you need to improve.
Yep. Great stuff. Brad Vaught, head women's basketball coach, North Iowa Area Community College, Mason City, Iowa. Coach, it has been awesome having you on the podcast here. If folks want to know more about you or your program, how can they find out about it?
Well, I tell you, we'd love to, come to a game. Come on up to a game, and you can always follow our program, nyacktrojans.edu, or you can always look us up that way, and keep track of what we're doing. NyacTrojans.com has our schedule, and you see some good players, some great basketball. And but man, you know, Marty, you're really good at what you do here. I feel like I could have sat here for 3-4 hours and visited with you. So this has been really, really fun, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, if you also go to Mason City, you're within a stone's throw of the day that the music died, where Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper and that type of stuff at the winter dance party at the the Clear Lake Ballroom or whatever it was.
The surf ballroom, and you're right on. That is a place. If people have not visited there, because there's a museum in there too. You've probably been in there, Marty, and seen. And there's this great artists that have come through there just because they want to perform there, you know, in that same place. And my wife and I have, we love that place.
Well, I would love to. As an Iowa native, I am disappointed to say I haven't been there yet. And as a pop culture guru, I haven't been there, so I'm slightly embarrassed to say those two things. We do this thing. We have a bell ringer for our senior current events class. We call it Modern Problems at my school. And one of the topics that someone will do at some point is the day the music died. So we'll have that on there as well. So that'd be good. I got to make my way up there. Maybe at some point I'll get there. Maybe on my way to Snow Valley, I'll take a detour at some point or do something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. So,
you feel like you've walked back in time when you walk in there.
Yeah.
And they've kept it like an older venue with the, you know, the old wooden booths that you can sit in and watch. And it just is a great place. And, well, you can go to a concert there. And then you could go to a NIAC game after that. There you go, Marty.
There you go. Yes, exactly. I've pulled Mrs. Plum around to many a show. Most of the time, she's fairly willing. We'll see what we can work out here, Brad. We'll try to make our way to North Central Iowa here at some point. Maybe with that little carrot at the end of the stick, we could talk her into it. So, Brad Vaught, head women's basketball coach at North Iowa Area Community College. Coach, I hope you've enjoyed your time on a pen and a napkin.
So much. It's been great. Thanks so much, Marty. Appreciate it.
You bet. Why don't you hold the line here a second, Coach, while we wrap everything up. Brad Vaught, head women's basketball coach, North Iowa Area Community College. I got a really good thing going there, and a lot of good stuff here that we talked about tonight. We again want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, for sponsoring the pod. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review this. Give us 5 stars. Subscribe. Do all that fun stuff. Email me with questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got our coaches clinic coming up April the 12th. We've got Varsity Prep Academy camp coming up in the first weekend in May, and more stuff. I got more stuff in the hopper. I got too many things in the hopper, but I've got a student teacher this semester, so I've got a little more time to do that type of stuff as well. So looking forward to sharing all of that stuff. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.